passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven. Fourth and goal. Still looking. Firing. Near corner. It's caught! Touchdown, Alabama! Isaiah Bond on a fourth and a mile!
Give that man the Heisman Trophy, Jalen Milroe. Good afternoon and welcome in on about as manic a Monday as you'll ever see. Good afternoon, and we have it all for you, including a live press conference of the new coach at Texas A&M. But the whole country still talking about what happened at Jordan-Hare 10 years after the prayer at Jordan-Hare and the kick six. It was more like the nightmare for the Auburn Tigers. There's so many questions about, is it the biggest play in the Iron Bowl? And I told somebody earlier today, we may have to wait and see. I hate to use that phrase, but if Alabama beats Georgia, wins a national championship, then I would dare say it probably is. We know what the kick six stopped. It stopped Alabama from winning a three-peat. We're not 100% sure what the Gravedigger special, or whatever they're calling it, will give the Crimson Tide. But what it did give them was the ability to avoid a nasty and punishing upset. Meanwhile, Georgia's three-peat depends on a familiar matchup. How often are we going to see this game in the SEC championship? And we're going to see it again. We knew that, but the stakes are pretty similar to where they were a year ago, except a little more urgent for Jordan. Big win over the weekend for Jaden Daniels. It was looking grim early on, and then Jaden did his magic as LSU wins six out of its last seven. Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, two SEC, oh, I forgot. Bo Nix left Auburn and is now in Oregon, and Michael Penix Jr., those two on the middle and right side of the screen will play each other this weekend. Big difference in the 20-yard plays. Jaden owned the day there. He pretty much owns it all from a statistical standpoint. And we've got some new coaches. Mike Elko, remember him? Yep. Used to be the DC under Jimbo Fisher. He is the new coach. He won't, no will be about it. He's already there. He'll be introduced in 2 hours. Remember Jeff Lebby worked for Lane. Yep. He's the new head coach at Mississippi State. Let's continue our endless conversation, and it's going to be like that for a while, about what happened Saturday in Auburn. John Talty, who's written the book on Nick Saban, who understands the psychology of the man better than anyone. John, good afternoon. Welcome in on quite a Monday. Let's hear from you what it's been like in that state for the last 40 hours.
Crazy. You know, I think for Alabama fans, this is, you know, a play they're going to be talking about for a long time, just how improbable that 4th-and-31 play was. And for Auburn, it's a heartbreaker. You know, I think that was a moment that I think could have been looked back on that, you know, really established the Hugh Freeze era in Auburn, you know, having that wild, crazy environment, a chance to steal a win against an Alabama team, to knock them out of the playoff. It was all right there for them. And to lose in such an unbelievable way, I think is, you know, painful. I'm sure there are a lot of places around the state today where that's a hot topic and Alabama fans are walking with a little bit extra pep in their step. And Auburn fans are, you know, a little bit kind of feeling Charlie Brown-like with their head down and just hoping that they're not getting too much trash from some of their Alabama friends.
John, let's move on to Saturday, because it's hard to, you know, back in the day before you were born and we were doing this at a daily newspaper every day, the Iron Bowl did not end quickly. It went on forever. But with a bigger game next week, Saturday, all eyes are on Atlanta. Give us, first of all, what's the health of this Alabama team heading into Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been one of the questions, and I think you saw that play out somewhat, you know, in that Auburn Iron Bowl game where, you know, Deontay Lawson and Jalen Key coming back from injuries did not look quite 100%. We'll see what they're going to able to be against Georgia, where that's going to be even more important given the way that Georgia's able to run the ball and be effective. And then, you know, Jason McClellan, I think, is a guy that, you know, you got to keep an eye on. We saw him in crutches after the game. I think it's, you know, trending. He's been, Nick Saban talked about how he's been dealing with injuries all year, essentially, you know, going to try to get him ready to go for Saturday. But you're right, Paul. I mean, we're already kind of talking about it, you know, just with some of my coworkers and things like that. You know, it's this unbelievable, incredible game. And not only are we already turning attention to Saturday, but talking about, you know, college football playoff. I think that those rankings and whether Alabama has a path in really just kind of dominates the conversation right now. And it is kind of making it, you know, that quick turnaround from this was unbelievable, but what does it mean, as you kind of hit on at the start of your show?
Let's talk about that because, first of all, the matchup, and not the matchup on the field, but the matchup among the coaches. I mean, you've dug deep. You're currently working on a book about the big world of college football, where two of the biggest players, if not the two biggest players right now, are Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. Take us inside, not so much the relationship, but the psychology of the relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. I think it's trite to say, but there's parts of it that feel Shakespearean, and I think depending on what happens, I think there's some potential comparisons that can be made by people like you. But there's just a lot of history between these two people. Obviously, Nick Saban hiring Kirby Smart back at LSU and really grooming him and developing him. And they're like-minded in a lot of ways, two very competitive people, two people that, you know, badly want to win or very committed to winning or working insane hours. And I think Kirby was well-built to sustain the grind at Alabama. You're seeing it, of course, now be deployed to great effectiveness at Georgia. And I think the stakes are big here, Paul. I think for Georgia, it's obvious there's an opportunity with a win here, you know, to avenge that 2021 SEC championship loss, but also to set up a possible three-peat, which is, you know, again, I think you kind of throw out anything that happened before World War II, and would really be the first, you know, modern three-peat in history, which would be incredible. And I think would secure Kirby Smart's status as one of college football's greatest coaches already at his young age. And it also would establish Georgia as the new dynasty. And on the flip side, you have Alabama, in which it feels like Nick Saban, kind of an aging king, trying to kind of fend off his top protege one last time. There's an opportunity, I think, with a win, you can get into the playoff. I think you can reestablish Alabama's place at the top of college football. I think with a loss, I think it becomes even more about Georgia and how Georgia is the clear top dog in the SEC. And I think that would be very hard for Nick Saban to swallow, just given all that he has done to build up Alabama and all he's done to build up Kirby Smart into kind of the monster that he is within college football right now.
You know, I think that's what makes this so fascinating, and not to rain on anyone's parade, because we really, after Texas, we were talking to you quite often about, well, what is it going to mean if Alabama loses this game? We pretty much quit talking about that because Alabama didn't do that, but we're back to the precipice again, and as fascinating a season as this has been, John, you know these things like you know your son's first name. A loss here Saturday, and that's 2 years in a row, but really, what, three out of four that Alabama's not in the playoffs when they normally had a spot in the championship game every year.
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. And I think that, you know, shows how difficult it is to get to that point. I think it will make us appreciate the run they had in time. You know, again, I've already written one book about Nick Saban about how incredible that time was. But I think as more and more time goes on, we'll look back on just their stronghold over the sport as truly incredible and unbelievable in so many ways. And I think, you know, the parity hasn't happened quite yet, but I think with the college football playoff expanding, with NIL, transfer portal, I think there will be opportunities for other programs to make their runs, and it'll be harder for teams to be able to just dominate the sport the way they have. But obviously, Georgia is the exception right now, and Georgia has a chance to really stamp their place in history. And again, I think as time goes on, these two guys are going to get compared to each other a lot. And Nick Saban does not have a three-peat, and Kirby Smart could, especially if he can win on Saturday.
Yeah, but John, as we close, for anyone who worries about where Nick Saban's place in history is for not being in that championship game, most of those championship games, he was in there against Dabo Swinney. Saban's heading to the championship game of his league with a shot at maybe a return to the national championship. Dabo Swinney celebrated Saturday night after losing four games. I mean, that just shows you how Saban has left one of his competitors in the dust. John Talty, can't wait to read more from him. We'll take a short break. We are back with the rest of the program and your phone calls right after this.
Thanks, appreciate it.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Friday afternoon, what a special conversation it was with Mr. Apple. Brian Kelly will join us, his final Monday conversation of the regular season. He's been with us every Monday since early September. Billy Lucci on what happened over the weekend. Seemed like they had a coach on Saturday night and ended up Sunday with Mike Elko. And we'll hear from Mike a little bit later on. But we want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to call in. It was that kind of weekend. I know we played the Alabama game, but there were so many other games, starting with the big one in Ann Arbor. Yep. And so many just fascinating games. It was a mind-boggling weekend, really, to try to keep up with it all. Let's begin with a positive call from Birmingham. JK is first up.
What's up, Feinbaum? I appreciate the introduction, but I know it's condescending. But check this out. I heard about 9 days ago, we got the laughter from the Black Hat King himself. Oh, Auburn paid New Mexico State $1.8 million to get their butt whooped. But they needed a miracle and a Hail Mary to beat that same Auburn team. Now you're going to get Alabama fans to drive to the A, which we call it, Atlanta. They're going to waste gas money and watch Alabama and hope they beat Georgia for an opportunity for a meaningless bowl game. I told you, Paul, preseason, I didn't expect any SEC team to make the playoffs this year. And if Alabama beats Georgia, that's exactly what's going to happen. And I'm going to tell you why. Alabama fans are in complete denial. They have that butt hurt, in denial, entitlement syndrome, and there is no medicine or cure for any of it. I told you preseason. Now here we are in week 13 with 11-1 Alabama team, a 12-0 Georgia team, and if Alabama wins, they're not going to make the playoff because the committee has told Bama and their obnoxious, delusional fans that Texas and that head-to-head matters. They've told them in every poll, Oregon is the best one-loss team. And Alabama's been stuck in the mud like a fat, lazy pig at number 8 in every single poll. So after this weekend, if Texas is 12-1 and a Big 12 champion, and Alabama miraculously a 12-1 SEC champion, what makes anybody think, again, that the committee is going to jump Alabama over Texas at that point? Now, coming up tomorrow, this is what you're going to see. You're going to see Michigan at 1, Georgia at 2, Washington at 3, FSU at number 4. You're going to have Oregon at number 5, Texas at 6, and guess what? Another team is going to take up that number 7 spot. And the name of that team is Ohio State, and Alabama will be still stuck at number 8. So they are not one of the 4 best teams. They haven't been since the polls came out.
You know,
out,
JK, and they won't if I could interrupt your pontificating, what Tuesday night doesn't mean one blanking thing, because we don't know yet what's going to happen. And if Alabama goes in and beats the number 1 team in the country, minds are going to change. Probably not yours,
hey, Paul,
because you're still
ball,
trying to figure out how your trash Miami team ended up with 5 losses, but that's really no longer relevant to our conversation. Dwayne is up next.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum. Going on, buddy?
Hey, Dwayne.
I saw you Friday and Saturday talking that noise. Hey, man, Alabama, man. No, Georgia might run over Alabama. What you think?
I don't believe anybody's running over Alabama.
I can't tell. Some people ran, man. Auburn ran over Alabama with that no contest offense. Hey, look, another thing I got to tell you. You got Brian Kelly coming on at 3:30 your local time. It's 2:30 my time.
Yeah, he'll be here.
Ask him when he's going to fire Matt House.
I'll bring it up.
That should be your first conversation with the man. When he's going to fire Matt House. Because that what Texas A&M was doing with a backup quarterback, man, they run all over LSU, man, with a backup quarterback. Hello?
Hey, Dwayne, so you want me to, should I just flat out say, hey, Coach, I got a question from one of our callers, Dwayne from New Orleans.
Yeah.
When are you going to fire
like
Matt
that.
House?
Say it like that, man. Hey, so you got... Hey, I'm a season ticket holder. You said, hey, look, you got a season ticket holder.
Oh, wow. I'm sure BK's going to go, okay, what section's he in?
I pay bills.
You know, JK, Dwayne, I'm sorry. You know how many seats Tiger Stadium has?
I don't care. I got one of them. I got two of them.
Got about what?
I don't care.
95,000 seats, and he's going to care about your thoughts on who his DC
because
should be.
Because you got other fans too. You got other fans too, now, Paul. Hey, just me now. Hey, I run the whole stadium, half of the stadium, half of the stadium. Talk about the defensive man. Now, you want to talk noise? The whole stadium at LSU. We're booing for the defense to get fired, the defensive coordinator to get fired. Now, tell them that.
Dwayne, something tells me that Brian Kelly's smart enough to know how bad the defense was this year.
I know he do because Texas A&M came out to punch him right in the mouth. Hey, he was looking on the sideline. If you watch that game, look at Brian Kelly, how Texas A&M going up and down that field. You should see that.
I caught a few minutes.
Yeah, you saw the disgust in that man's face. You saw how he was looking, like can't get off the field on third down.
Well, I want you to listen, Dwayne, when we talk to BK here in a minute. The question will come up. I don't think I'll just be as bold as you because I have too much respect for Brian Kelly to say, hey, because a couple of yahoos in the upper deck were booing. Which sounds like they're booing the players, which is a really bad look for an adult like you.
They're booing the whole defense. Hey, and Major Byrne, that garbage saved to that dude, that's garbage. That saved to Major Byrne, he's just pitiful. Yeah, he's pitiful.
You know, Dwayne, fortunately, one of the two people on the line here is going to have a cooler head. And I trust Brian Kelly because I think Brian's smart enough to – take a look at what was happening. But stick around. We'll bring it up. James is up next.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well.
And Miles, how are you doing, I turned Damon? Into the Shakespeare Channel.
Well, I'm just trying to follow John Talty. I wonder when he wrote his book, and I'm borrowing from Ron McKee right here. Did he write this book in crayon, Paul? I mean, I can tell you.
Well, James, I can tell you a little bit about the book, considering that my blurb is on the cover of the book about how great it is.
Oh.
I actually read the book. I read the book, and it was an outstanding book. It went inside Nick Saban's genius. And he sold a lot of copies. He was a bestseller. Are you a bestseller, James?
We're working on it, Paul.
Yeah, well, you better work fast.
How much time do I have?
As much time as you need to sound intelligent.
I appreciate that. Now, the last time I was on here talking with you, you were trying to get me to throw some of our players under the bus. As I recall, you were claiming Auburn had some deficiencies over there and on the plains. And I think Saturday, little brother was quite a bit more than just a little annoyance. What do you think?
I really don't know, James. I missed the game. I was too busy bowling on Saturday. We'll take a break. Brian Kelly, the aforementioned, will join us next. And stick around because we have invited Dwayne to do the interview.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It is our final Monday conversation, at least for the football regular season, with Coach Brian Kelly, who's been gracious throughout, mostly wins, quite a season. The regular season's over, Coach. Congratulations on the win Saturday, and how are you doing?
Well, I'd rather be still playing. Obviously, you know, our standard is to play for championships, and we're not involved in it this year, but I'm proud of our football team. You know, being 3-2, you know, you have to look at yourself in a mirror and find out the things you have to do better. And we won 6 out of our last 7 games and lost on the road to a very good Alabama team. So, you know, once again, 6-2 in the SEC and what I consider the best conference. Good foundational pieces for us, but we've got to take the next step, and that is, you know, win the SEC championship.
And let's talk about that next step because it's going on as we speak with the portal and recruiting. I realize you have a trip to New York probably in a week and a half, which we'll get to in a minute. But let's talk about what happens right now. The film sessions are over. You've got a little time before the bowl situation is set, but I'm sure there's a lot happening.
Yeah, I think it starts with evaluations, you know, with your team. I think it's important that you sit down with your players, you know, let them know what they did well, you know, certainly what they need to do better, and then talk about, you know, what the future looks like. Because I think retention is first and foremost the most important thing right now for our football program. It's not, you know, who can you get through the portal. That'll be part of this entire process in the off season, but I think retention first. So spend some time with your players and then your staff. You know, you want to be able to do a full evaluation of your coaches, your support staff, everybody that's involved in the program. And we'll do that over the next week or so. And then, you know, we got to get back on the road and recruit here. So recruiting now until it goes dead on the 17th is an important part of this as well as we look towards 24, 25, and 26.
And Coach, I know the player part is important, but it has to be difficult. You've done this a long time, but still, you meet with your staff. I don't know exactly the nuances and the machinations of what's ahead, but how does that work? And how difficult a process is it for you?
Well, I think if you're honest and you're open about, you know, what the strengths are and the weaknesses and how you go about doing that on a day-to-day basis, it makes it a lot easier. If you're not communicating with your staff and you're not open and honest with conversations during the week and during the season, then sometimes having these conversations at the end of the season, you know, they become a surprise. I don't think there's many surprises within our program because, you know, we're pretty transparent with what's going on. You know, we had some struggles, you know, certainly on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about them every day. We know where the problems are and what needs to be addressed. And so we'll sit down and we'll have to make decisions as to what is the best thing for our program moving forward, because, you know, our standard is very high here. This is not about going, you know, 9-3. We want to win a championship. So we've got to take the next step and we have to look internally. What do we need to do in terms of recruiting? What do we need to do about coaching and coaching at a higher level? And how do we support that, you know, institutionally? So all of those factors have to be looked at, you know, over the next week to 10 days.
And in relation to players, take us into that, with obviously, you know, protecting the players' confidentiality, but what are those conversations like and how long do they last?
We generally try to carve out about 20 minutes per player. And certainly they are, you know, certainly a feedback from them in terms of what they see and what their awareness is about what their strengths and weaknesses are. And then we're going to give them, you know, our feedback. And then, you know, how do we move forward from there? You know, sometimes it's about getting on the same page with the player in terms of, you know, what we see as their strengths and what their weaknesses are and making sure that they understand that. I think it's important that when we're done with these exit interviews, that everybody's on the same page. If somebody doesn't agree or certainly doesn't see it the same way, we got to make sure that during these exit interviews that we leave on the same page and that we can move forward one way or the other.
Let me get to the field as we continue with Coach Kelly. Jaden Daniels had his last regular season. I think we all know by now how you feel and how a lot of people feel about his performance this year, but this is the campaign season for the Heisman. I got the ballot this morning, so not that you're going back to your old political work, but if you are his manager and you're pretty close to being his campaign manager, what would your final sales pitch be?
Vote early, vote often for Jaden Daniels. I was near Chicago, and I know that worked in Chicago quite well for many years. No, seriously, I think you look at, you know, his body of work throughout the entire season from the start to finish, and there was no single better player in the country than Jaden Daniels. His numbers speak to that. You know, the players around him got better during the year. The numbers that the wide receivers put up were amazing. And his rushing yards as well. I mean, his ability to run it, throw it. Anytime we needed to get a play or get out of a tough situation, he made it for us. Just staggering numbers. When you put him up against a Joe Burrow, who we thought that those numbers might stay forever, I think that puts it in a pretty good perspective in terms of the kind of year that he had.
As you reflect back, Coach, and you'll be asked this many times, I'm sure, as the Heisman ceremony gets closer, you know, how has he progressed from the moment that he stepped foot on that campus to what you saw last Saturday?
You know, I thought, you know, the thing that I pointed out more times than not was a young man that kind of was very humble and maintained that same humble approach to things, even as he became a front runner in the Heisman. He hasn't changed. And so success hasn't changed who this young man is. And that's what you love about people when success hasn't changed them. That's the first thing that stands out. But I think as a player, the thing that really is amazing is that he took the things that he was not good at and he went to work and he fixed them. And I think that that's what we underline here is that players fix things, not coaches. Players go out and do it. And what I love about it is that he went out and fixed the things that he needed to fix. He needed to push the ball down the field. He needed to be more aggressive. He needed to keep the ball in play. And when he throws a long ball, it's in play and it allows his receivers to make plays. And for that, I just commend him because he fixed the things he needed to fix.
Coach, I would like to ask you, as everybody in our circle moves ahead to Saturday in Atlanta, just going back a year to that experience for you, you played for the national championship, you've been in the playoffs, you played in some of the most important rivalry games in college football history, but what was that like? And I'm curious just your thoughts on the SEC championship game in general.
Yeah, I think it's a great environment. I think it rivals you know, any kind of big game environment that I've been in. Certainly, you know, when you have, you know, a stage as grand as, you know, playing in Atlanta, that SEC championship game and the way it's staged, it feels like a championship game. It feels different than a regular season game. And so I think that that's what that platform's for. It's to put the two best in the SEC in a championship format. So hats off to everybody that puts that together and really places the two best teams in a position to play for, you know, a national championship, and you feel it there. And, you know, certainly Georgia and Alabama have earned their way into it. And whoever the winner of that game is certainly poised to be a national championship. And I'm not sure that even the runner up can't win the national championship either.
Coach, it's been a pleasure. We certainly hope to see you again soon, but we deeply appreciate your weekly visits. We are going to miss them, but I'm sure you'll have plenty else to do in these next few weeks.
It'll be busy. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate being on all year. Thanks again.
It's been our pleasure. Brian Kelly joining us from Baton Rouge as we take a short break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
How about this? Read and react. You got an Auburn guy and an Alabama guy. I wonder what they'll talk about. Billy Lucci, top of the hour.
Man. I want to talk about my Mike Elko. I'm a fan of now, but I want to say something real quick. I appreciate you giving that guy's number to me. I mean it from the bottom of my heart, but I really appreciate that. I want to tell you that, but I got to talk about Mike Elko. Paul, I don't care about Jimbo no more. Jimbo's the past. It's about the present. Mike Elko can help turn around a program. He's good at developing players. He's a good CEO. He's not a defensive guy. He loves offense, too. And he doesn't interfere with coaches or ability to do their job. The only thing that worries me, like Bill Lucci said, is how many players can he keep on the offensive side? Doesn't he keep plenty of people on the defensive side? I just hope he allows Vitino to stay and keep his offensive coordinator, because he deserves to stay. It wasn't his fault with the offense. They were just banged up. They had a lot of injuries.
We'll talk to Billy Lucci at top of the hour, Mike Elko in the next hour. John is up next in Louisville.
Hey, Paul, good afternoon and happy Cyber Monday. Good luck with your credit card.
I just lost it. Do you know who took it?
your wife. Hey, great win by Alabama, but, man, they've got to up their game for Georgia. And before I give you my takeaways, I just want to say the Thaddeus Bullard interview was just awesome.
Thank
with
you.
This message of kindness and giving back. And shout out to his mother who gave him life, and his successes will be her legacy. It was just a great interview. But so some quick thoughts. I was up at the Ann Arbor at the Michigan game, and I was thinking toward the end of the game, there was an 82-year-old ex-coach sipping his Crown Royal saying, "See, I told you they're not tough, right?"
That's funny.
And I guess that's the end for the Buckeye fans and SEC haters. They've gone back into federal witness program. Jim Harbaugh's out of jail, but I think he's under investigation for stealing Ohio State's manhood. But I thought it was a mess down there in at A&M with the unhiring of Mark Stoops, who put out a 1 a.m. Tweet that he's staying after he was unhired, but I do think they got a great coach.
So what do you help me with this, because I'm still trying to unpack the whole Stoops situation. What happened?
I think Billy Lucci, of all people, reported that they're all about ready to hire Mark Stoops. He didn't say anything when he was asked at his press conference, and then in the next several hours, with all the Texas A&M people getting online complain about the hire, it turned out they hired Mike Elko.
I'm watching it in real time. It didn't appear that there was any enthusiasm for Mark Stoops. I mean, you can't take away the win over Louisville, but it's been a underwhelming 2 years for Mark Stoops.
1-19 against top 10 teams, and yeah, they went crazy down at Texas A&M. And I thought the hire they did finally make is the only one they should have considered.
Well, he was one of the, you know, after all the big names passed, he was realistic and gettable.
Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to the Lucci interview, because he kind of reported that Stoops was the man. And then, you know, by 10 or 11 p.m., he's not the man. And then by 1 a.m.
John, it almost looks like they put Stoops out there as the Trojan horse. And they said, hey, we didn't hire Mark Stoops. We did get a good guy in Mike Elko. So Elko, who may not have looked as good 24 hours ago, suddenly looks a lot better.
Reminds you of Tennessee. I felt like Stoops got Geneva, doesn't it?
He really did. But yeah, I think there would have been a far stronger reaction today had Mark Stoops been introduced than Mike Elko. A far stronger negative reaction.
Absolutely. Good show, Paul.
Thank you. And by the way, that doesn't mean Stoops in the right setting wouldn't be excellent. He may be. We just know what he is in Kentucky. And it's good. Stacy is up next.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum. Pleasure, man, meeting you and spending time
Stacy
with you.
Stacy came down to the crib on Friday afternoon, and we hung out.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Stacy, I tried to tell you. I told you didn't need to pick up that final round late Friday night. I was going to get that.
I appreciate that, Paul. I appreciate it.
I just
Paul,
lost my credit card.
I don't know I don't know why you won't let me get him, Paul. Why won't you let me get him, Paul? That JK. I need to get that JK,
Stacy told me he wants a piece of JK. I said, come on, go easy on the guy. He had a terrible season with Miami.
Well, let me say this, Paul. JK, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to give you an invite because I know you're not doing anything Saturday. So I'm giving you an invite to watch a real football team, the Alabama Crimson Tide. That's your invite, JK. All right, now I want to say something to Danny Pinnell. He says he's giving us a warning. He said that Georgia is going to slow boat Alabama. Danny Connell, I came on this Paul Feinbaum show, and I said it one time, I'm going to say it again.
Now, Stacy, what did I tell you privately about Danny Connell? I mean, I tried to warn you off this guy.
Well,
he's just a troll. You know that, Stacy.
I got a message for him. The only team that can beat Georgia, and I said this before.
Hold on, Stacy. Hold on. Stop the presses.
Okay.
You said you wanted a piece of JK. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. Put him on.
JK, you've got Stacy.
Well, what's happening, Stacy? Let me hear it, baby.
Hey. Oh, it ain't no what happened. Let me hear it. I'm finna give you some facts, my brother. I'm getting sick and tired of you calling this Paul Feinbaum show, talking about Alabama. Talk about Miami. What has Miami done for us lately? Nothing.
All right, I'm about to talk about him. You listening?
What you doing? Go ahead. Say what you got to say.
All right, Miami and Alabama both going to be watching the playoffs. Now, what else you got?
Okay, so what you going to be doing Saturday?
So I'm going to be watching Georgia kick Bama butt. Now, what else you got?
So you're going to be watching Alabama, right? And so let me tell
you
what
Alabama
going to do.
Alabama get their butt kicked.
Alabama gonna beat Georgia, and we going to the college football playoff because we gonna have the best win in the country.
You
and
got the best
you
loss.
Still talking. Miami gonna still be at
y'all
home.
Got the best loss.
A bowl game if they get a bowl game. So don't
all right, you finished. Is it my turn yet? It's my turn, sir. Hey, sir, pipe down. It's my turn. Y'all got the best win. You got the best loss. You got the best coach. And you're going to have the best damn seat on the couch watching the playoffs because you ain't going to make it.
And you've been sitting on the couch probably the last 13 years. Am I right?
You correct. We've been on the couch for 20 years. But what they got to do with y'all not making it this year?
Probably more than 13 years. I tell you
what,
JK.
You know what? Bama,
Why you
got to give you some credit. I'm going to give you some credit. Alabama going to be the first 12-1 team to sit at home and watch the playoffs.
If that's the case, guess who else is going to be watching them sit at home?
I just told you,
you and the resident weak Miami fan base. Y'all, man, let me tell you something. JK, do this for me, please. Do this for me. Answer this question for me, JK. Why you hate Alabama so much?
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.